Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast.
This week's episode of Ringside is sponsored by The Great Goat. I don't know about y'all, but I'm ready for spring, and with that, cooking outside on the grill. Level yourself up to the level of grill master by using The Great Goat's rubs and spices to make your meals great. Go to www.greygoatbbq.com to order their variety pack and use the code RINGSIDE10 at checkout to save 10% off your order. Your stomach and family will be impressed by your grilling skills.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. I'm John, and like my co-host Danielle, we're now cat ladies.
Shh. That wasn't public knowledge. There are people that don't know this plan exists to get barn cats.
And do those people actually listen to the show?
Some of them do.
Do I need to do a new intro, or are you fine with it?
Oh, I'm totally fine with this.
Okay. We're cat ladies!
Yay! This is now Ringside, an American Dairy Goat and Cat podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
The cat podcast will air on Fridays.
Yes.
So those that don't know, Danielle's getting cats, and so am I.
Yes, I need barn cats. And so I found some barn cats and I called dibs first.
And I don't know. You called dibs on like for color or whatever, but I called dibs on sex.
I said I had first pick and you just tried to, it'll probably work out that you'll get the two females anyway, but I just want the cute ones. So that's all good.
Everybody knows that female cats are the better mousers.
I don't really care as long as they're doing their job. And I probably need birders more than mousers at this point, hopefully, knock on wood. But, you know,
yes.
Population control of all vermins, flying and non-flying, will be helpful for me. So
I think that we should probably state for listeners that our barns aren't overrun with mice and rats and such. At least mine isn't. My problem, because we get every once in a while, we'll have like a boom where we're like, oh crap, there's rats. Right? It just happens whenever you're feeding animals grain. Right. I haven't seen anything, and that's including like, usually you'll see it when you're checking cameras at night when you've got goats kidding and stuff. And right. I haven't seen anything, but it's a good preventative, you know?
Oh, 100%. And we did, in our barn renovation, we did find a nest. And so those were taken care of. I just feel like, meh, we need them. And I don't do little vermins at all, live or dead. This is the solution. And I also have a lot of birds, and I hate the birds. They're pooping in the water buckets, making everything dirty. And so if they're birders as well, it's good.
Maybe we'll have a contest where somebody can name one of our cats. I don't know.
Your cats. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. We'll think about it. We'll make it.
All right, now that we're cat ladies, what else is going on your farm, Danielle?
I am in nesting mode. I think that's what it is, right? Where I am cleaning like crazy for the imminent arrival of baby goats.
Oh, thank goodness. I thought you were going to say baby human.
No, oof. God, no.
Okay. I was going to say, I can't plan a baby shower.
No. No, baby goats. The first ones do when this podcast airs on that Monday the 20th. But I don't know if she's going to go anywhere close to the 20th. As of right now, she's just continuing to bake those babies. I also typically take my Nubians at 150 days plus for kitting. I'm not one that really expects my herd to go too much quicker than 150 days. She's just kind of chilling. And in fact, I have her due, and then 3 or 4 days later, I have kind of my first rush where I have like 4 or 5 due in the weekend. Some of those does look closer to kitting than she does. So we'll see how it all plays out. If she wants to go late and these does want to go on time, and then we have everybody kid in a short time period, I would be okay with that. And like pure chaos for a few hours, and then everybody would be on the program at the same time. Life would be good.
All right, yeah.
So that's my dream. That's my hope.
Yeah. Speaking it into existence.
Exactly. Sometimes that works on this podcast, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Maybe I'll speak what's going on in my farm into existence. So,
oh boy.
Well, we have sold 2 Guernsey Oberhousley Cross Buck kids today. They are gone to their new farm, so that's good. Actually, friend of the podcast, John Hall.
And now friend of the farm.
Yes, yes. He came and picked them up. We had a nice little visit before he took the trek back home. And so I'm down to 3 kids. And
oh my gosh.
I know. And I think 1 buck kid is sold, so that's cool. The other one, if he doesn't sell as a buck, he's going as a wether. And those both will be leaving April 1st or 2nd. Then I'll just be down to my 1 doe kid and whatever my doe busy has this coming week. So my 6th doe will be kidding this week, so people will know what my total was. And if you guessed high, sorry. But yeah, that's kind of what's going on. We're just kind of just cruising.
Cool. Congratulations on moving those kids out. Oh my, is it going to be weird that in a few days you're only going to have a handful?
I guess. I'm actually looking forward to getting rid of the buck kids because buck kids are so silly on the bottle. I have 1 that's still like the stupid buck kid that can't find the nipple without you prying his mouth open. So that's annoying. So it'll be fine. Yeah. Plus 1's pretty big already. Like he's so gorgeous, but he's probably going to go as a wether just because he's experimental. So
understandable. But I do have, I don't know if it's 1 word or 2 words for you on that topic.
Oh, okay.
Bucket feeder.
I have 3 goats right now for a bucket feeder. Like it's fine.
No, that is true. That is true. If I just figured if they were a pain in the neck, it's easier to do it on the bucket. It's easier to feed them on the bucket sometimes.
Well, once you pry his mouth and get him on the nipple, he doesn't let go. Okay. So like it's cool. So I can feed 2 at a time, and then my tiny little Guernsey Oberhousley Cross doe kid, she's just here for the party. Like she comes out and she'll snuggle up on my lap and drink her bottle, and it's cute. So it's therapy.
And being the only doe kid, definitely probably 100% likely that she's very spoiled currently.
I mean, as spoiled as a kid can get, I guess, for our farm. It's been cold out, so it's not like we're like letting them out every day to run around and knock some energy out. So they're just kind of like the guy that lives on the couch type deal where they're just chilling, waiting for their next meal and then go back to chilling.
Oh, okay. And what does Alice think of them this year?
She loves these goats. First of all, she sees the Guernsey kids and she's like, yellow goat. So I was joking with Tierney that we might have to register her as yellow goat. She likes them. I mean, if they start jumping up to play with her and stuff, she does the full back stiff arm and pushes them away. So she doesn't like them all in her face, but she likes them. She'll go up and pet them and she gets all happy and says baby goats or yellow goat whenever she sees them. So It's fun. It's a fun year this year. I just was up doing chores with her last night with Tierney, and she was running around in the goat pen with me, and she was happy. You know, she's petting them, and she's more interested right now in picking up hay, that wasted hay, and throwing it over her head and getting it all over her. But she's enjoying life.
That's good. No, I'm happy, because this is probably the first year that she's actively involved in just like baby recognition.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. I don't know what the proper development might be, the better word.
So it's probably cool. The
first year that she knows what's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, once the weather gets a little bit better for doing chores, she'll be up there with me. We're going to put a playpen up there, and she'll be out there watching me do chores or helping me do chores. She likes to try to carry the water buckets. It's really cute because she does the little whenever she tries to pick it up. It's really fun. So,
oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's what you want.
Danielle, there was some changes in the ADCA world this week.
Minor ones, right?
Were they minor? Because everybody was losing their godforsaken minds. I thought maybe we'd touch on that, shall we?
Sure.
All right, I'll let you start it off, because I know you've got a soapbox and everything that you want to go on.
My soapbox will be, I'll save my soapbox for like the end of our ADCA news segment. But first thing I feel like we should say, just in terms of organizational structure of what's been going on, is the linear appraisal map for the scheduled stops for 2023 has been posted. If you signed up for appraisal, and technically you can still sign up until, is it April 15th maybe?
I think that's it.
At a increased fee, but the linear appraisal map has been posted for 2023 with the areas that are getting appraised and roughly when they will be appraised. So that has been posted, and people can start kind of planning how that's going to work for them.
Yeah. Can I touch on something real quick for that?
Go for it.
Okay. So obviously in the past, what the schedule looked like was, since Florida and those southern states start before everybody else as far as kiddings, because their show season's different, linear appraisal starts there. Well, this year, it's not starting there. They're later in the schedule. I believe they're in the fall. And I saw so many Florida people really mad that their appraisal date is later. And if they're concerned because their does are either going to be dry by then or stale, and they don't think it's fair. My stance on that is linear appraisal is supposed to be a rotating date anyway. Not so much like for nationals where it's rotating, but it should differ from year to year, at least every couple years. That way linear appraisers can see animals in different stages of their lactations, and they get scored. I mean, heck, people up in the Northeast, they'll be kidding goats in December, January, and our show season can go all the way up until Big E, which is September.
October.
Sorry, even later. And they still do it, right? And they get appraisal dates that late some years. So for them, I've never seen anybody anywhere really complain about getting an appraisal date. But then also the people in Florida were like, well, that's hurricane season. It's like, okay, well, October can be blizzard season up in Maine. It can be flooding season in California. Like, the weather has nothing to do with it. There's obviously going to be adjustments made if there's some crazy weather going on. I think people need to reflect back to COVID in 2020, when everybody was so hungry to get their animals appraised and go to shows. And now you're getting appraisal dates, or at least like a schedule is for what area is going to get what dates. And people are complaining. Where, just think back when we didn't have it. So be thankful that you got a date. And that's what I got to say about that.
Yeah. And I will offer insight, because I've been appraised in mid to late September before, and obviously I'm in the Northeast. I kit out in typically February through April. The appraisers recognize and ask questions of when did she freshen, when they are evaluating that mammary system, and take those things into effect or into account, sorry, when they are creating those scores. There's the issue potentially of goats being pregnant, and that wasn't something I dealt with, so I can't necessarily provide insight into how that's going to be evaluated. My scores that year were just as good as when they are earlier in the season as well. It's a little bit of management of making sure their mammary systems are where you want them to be in terms of fill and things like that, just like you would do at a show. Obviously, with linear appraisal, you don't want them uttered up to capacity, but maybe you're putting a little bit more milk in because it's the end of the year and they're just not producing as much anyway in their lactation. The other thing is that my does, when we got appraised in that September period, had just come off a week-long stay at a fair. There's things that happened, but again, it's just managing goats and figuring out where it is and how everything falls. And the information right. you can glean will be beneficial regardless of whether your doe is in her prime show condition or she's later in her lactation.
So people be thankful and quit your complaining. And I've already called out a few people on Facebook, and I'll continue to it's crap.
Oh my God.
I do it tactfully, right? It's not like I'm just telling them they're stupid, but I'm letting them know the facts, which I stated before. So I guess we'll move on to, let's face it, a drama swirl of a post. There is a postal ballot out, guys. And it got heated on Facebook about this hiding of postal ballots, which, guys, they're not hiding them. You can go online and see them. So let's go through what this postal ballot is. Danielle, do you want to kick it off?
So I just want to back up a second because there have been three postal ballots so far for 2023. One was withdrawn. The second one, 2023-2, we'll talk about briefly. And then the postal ballot currently out, we'll talk about after we get through 2022-2023-20 or -2. But if you want to find them and read the ballots, they are in that member protected page, or sorry, password protected page for members that has the guidebook and the membership directory and committee reports and all that inside information that ABGA doesn't necessarily want out to the general public, but wants their memberships to have available to them. So it's in that password protected page, which I think is a little different setup than how they've had them in the past, but that is where they are. And the results are posted there too. But right. So with that, in postal ballot 2223-2, there were six sections of the ballot and kind of encompassed all different aspects of ABGA operations. But the brief synopsis for section one was that there was going to be an increase in ribbon fees for shows, and that passed. Then section two, there was going to be a merchandise increase fee, and that passed. This will also influence guidebooks and membership directories, and they will be made available online, but they will not be sent to you in a print form. But the guidebook in particular is going to be formatted so it is easy to print if you wish to print it. And then section three was there is going to be a registration cost increase. That passed as well. And if you want to see the information on what those new fees are going to be and everything, I encourage you to go to the postal ballot for more specific information. And then section four, there was scholarship funding reduced. So the Jim Morris scholarship, and I forget what the title for the youth convention scholarships, but there was a reduction in the funding from the ADGA general fund to these scholarships, and that was passed as well. Section five was the 2023 Board of Directors annual meeting stipend reduction, and that failed. And section six was the linear appraisal change. That failed as well, but that being said, postal ballot 2022-23-3 is currently out, and that tackles linear appraisal in a different way.
Right. So let's break down all of that, because this is a big postal ballot.
Right.
So the shows, part one, that was passed, and that was because the company that we buy the ribbons from increased their cost to produce everything. So we, of course, had to increase cost, which I think it was like 38 cents per ribbon or something like that.
I think it was a little bit more than that, but it ended up being $3.98
or something to $5.
Yeah, I think ribbons used to be $8 and $4, and now it's, I should have pulled this up, but I think it's $10 and $5 or $10
six.
Across $10 and $6. Okay.
Yeah. So yes. that's like, yes, this yeah, it's going to take a little bit out of the pocket of these shows, but I mean, it's bad business to take a loss on things. So that's fine. I really don't think there's anything to expand with that. Number two was the merchandise. Really what everybody took away from this was part D, which was the guidebook only being available online. And yes, at convention, I believe they discussed getting us the guidebooks, and it just, I personally think it's 2023. Like, we can go online and look it up. If people don't have internet or something, maybe they should offer a fee for people to buy it and they can print out a copy. Or if somebody's really can't print out a copy themselves, ask a goat friend. We're always there for each other and we'll do it for you. Right?
Right.
And I want to also say, like, people, this seems like it's a huge money grab, all these changes. Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that ADGA's hurting for money right now. I've been screaming that for years now, since this podcast started, ever since NG launched, that this is an expensive thing. This software is not cheap. And the fact that we've continually had to hire people to work on it day in and day out is expensive. So I can only assume, and nobody knows the financials except for who's on that board, but I can only assume that we're really hurting for money. And that's what's driving this, taking out the expenditures that aren't needed and adding in increases to help save this registry. I'll also say registrations go up again. I kind of just explained it right there. Like, I honestly feel like it's just to make it make sense business-wise, fiscally, to pay everybody to produce these registrations in the office and get them out with postage going up and everything, just makes sense.
I think this is the first time, and maybe it's just what has been available to membership to see versus what hasn't been, what is more kept with the directors, but this is the first time I've seen them figure out the breakdown of what those registration papers cost to produce. So postage stamps, printing, rental of the printers and copiers, or envelope, the time to generate this, all of those things, that they've broken it down to figure out what the actual cost to the registry is. And so that is something, and that's not even the other parts of it all, but the physical printing of those papers. So I think obviously there was a rate increase and from the board at convention, and then this is a new one. But I think that this is probably the first time in a while that there is a full understanding of what the current cost is. If that is the truth, that all of a sudden it's not, oh, we're good and everything's good, and but going, oh, wait, we timed it. We figured out it takes 10 minutes to do this, and that cost is going to be X, and the postage is this, and the paper is this, and this printer can print 100 sheets, and that costs us whatever. That is good, because who knows if somewhere in the books we were losing 20 cents of registration paper because we just assumed it was good because money was coming in and money was going out. And so this, unfortunately, you know, I know a lot of people are like, oh my God, they just raised the rates. The rates are have been risen to reflect what the actual cost of printing these things are. So it's just kind of, I think this is the first time, and I, like I said, I might be completely wrong, and maybe every time there was an increase, it was actually figured out and calculated a little bit more closely, but this is the first time I think that it's been accurate. And the other thing I want to touch on is, and we've been saying this for a while, I think I've said it several times, but transaction fees for credit cards. To make NG work right now, you want to register a kid individually is probably the best practice to just, you register one, you pay, you register again, you pay. There is the credit card fee, which is universal. And actually the credit card fee that ADGA is paying is probably even a little bit on the lower end versus some of the other platforms I've seen in credit card fees. But there is a 3.2% cost plus a 10% cost on credit card fees. So what does that mean? That 3.2% is going to be the same regardless of how many of what that total bill is. It's just going to be 3.2% of that. But because we have to do a transaction of each individual item, that is 10 cents now chalked on to each registration paper payment. So that because it's not that that 10 cents can get divided between 20 different papers. It is now a 10 cent fee for using the NG system in the best possible way right now with its capabilities and how it's struggling. So I don't know. I think this is just catching up. And I think, yes, it'll hurt our pocketbooks, but it'll.
It's not hurt my pocketbooks. It's hurting my buyer's pocketbooks. If they want a registered animal, I'm charging them that registration cost.
Yeah.
That's it.
Ultimately, the reason, like, that registration is worth the increase, I think. But
oh, our registration fees are lower than most livestock registers there are. So I think that this... I have no problem with this. I'm sorry. Yeah. Everything's going up in price, people, and you should adjust your business's prices just like anybody else in ADGA, you know?
Amen.
Number four was scholarships offerings. They're reducing the amount of offerings. I'm mixed on this. Like, I get fiscally why they're doing this. I also think that we should be supporting our youth the best we can. It's not their fault that ADGA's in the turmoil that it is in. It's kind of a slap in their face. Everybody preaches, especially a lot of people on that board, preach how youth should come first, support your youth, watch them do all of their showmanship stuff and everything at nationals, but hey, let's take away some scholarships from kids. So it went from, let's see... At the current state, it was one $1,000 scholarship and 12 $750 scholarships. So that's potentially two kids per district, right? Or no, that makes no sense, but almost two kids per district. It's changing to two $1,000 scholarships and four, I believe, $750 scholarships. it's kind of is what it is there. I think it would have made more sense to offer 8 scholarships at $750 or maybe a lower cost. I don't know. Just to offer it to each kid in each district. You know, if there are kids in each district that would sign up for that. 5 is the Board of Director Annual Meeting Stipends, which they get $300 and they retain a one-way mileage for directors to offset director costs to attend the annual meeting. They also get a full week registration with meals at annual meeting. And that's also the director emerita. they're not included in this, apparently, 6A. But anyway, this passed. This failed. So we're still, the registry is still paying that stipend and everything. My feeling on this, Danielle, and I don't know if you want to say anything about this, but my feeling on this is that it's 2023. We've had one meeting over Zoom call that went pretty well. Why the heck are we going to convention for a board meeting, paying all this money when people can sit at home on Zoom, eat a dollar bag of Cheetos if they wish, or whatever their snack of choice is, and do it that way? I get that they're trying to draw people for the convention and the host groups and all that. But honestly, after seeing the convention at Syracuse and the lack of membership actually going, I don't see how we're making money. Is it fun? Heck yeah, it's great. I had a wonderful time. But is it worth it? I don't know.
Well, and I think Zoom is, and everybody being familiar with how Zoom works now, I mean, we do our club meetings mostly on Zoom, and we're trying now to get together sometimes to do the meetings and just have the more social aspect of it. But we get a lot of accomplished through Zoom. We're able to have a larger base of members because it's a lot easier for everybody to get on a Zoom call than have to drive. Sometimes, even if it's 20 minutes, it's 20 minutes round trip, or, you know, 20 minutes back and forth. So that's almost an hour of your time plus the meeting versus, oh, let me just finish chores and hop on this Zoom, or I'm going to listen to this Zoom while I'm milking. And obviously at the board of directors meeting, you would want them to be a little bit more present than jumping on while milking, but it just makes life so much easier and more accessible. And it is a serious cost consideration, and Zoom should be, I think, encouraged for that. I understand the idea of what'll happen to convention. I think it gives convention a chance to reinvent what they're doing and where it is and the programming. We might be able to find, if we don't have to necessarily accommodate the board meetings, we might be able to find different places and have a convention that's a shorter time frame with more learning opportunities for our members and different things like that, that could actually be beneficial. And I don't necessarily want to speak on the logistics of convention too much because I don't know the whole ins and outs. But as long as there's creativity, change can work. And change could be good, and it could reinvent something. And even if they were able to save, let's say they could save $20,000, or they would save $20,000, and $20,000 would go into the general fund again or something like that. And then that $20,000 could be put towards programming or what have you, because the directors, quite frankly, really can't do much of the educational aspects of convention. They're at the board meeting all day. The money could be redistributed a little bit, and it might not be a bad thing. So I'm here for exploring it, seeing if Zoom can be functional and going from there. But that wasn't the postal ballot, but that's just kind of my thought on it.
All right, perfect. Number six, that failed, and that was about linear appraisal. So we're going to jump right into the new postal ballot, which is postal ballot 2223-3. Just to kind of sum it up, the proposal is to offer appraisal on young stock and any animal designated by the code 99, complete mastectomy, missing a limb, completely dry, etc., would be considered informational only. So it's not going to go on their final score, basically. Only milking dose scores are used in the formula. Any animals scored for informational purposes, young stock code 99, or bucks are not included in the minimum stop fee. So you got to pay on top of that, folks. So the following restrictions apply to this. All animals must be declared at the time of currently owned list is completed and returned. All animals declared on the currently owned list will be billed even if not presented. Any animals scored must be registered. Stamp duplicates are accepted. Young stock scoring will be offered at the rate of one per two milkers. So if you have four milkers, you can do two young stock. Any young stock must be at least 2 months old at the time of scoring. Young stock and code 99 scoring fee is $10 each and will not receive a final score. Buck scoring fee will be $20 per buck and will continue to be recorded. So that's kind of the breakdown of that. Danielle, I'll get your thoughts first before I'll wrap it up.
So I just want to mention really quick that this is being considered right now. It has not been passed or failed. So we'll see what the board does on that. I want to say something about linear appraisal more than the ballot, but
okay.
You can chime in on that.
My feelings on this postal ballot is linear appraisal isn't making money at the current state that it's in with the cost of everything for these appraisers to go throughout the country. Gas prices going up, airline tickets, all that stuff has to be paid for, right? So this is just another opportunity for ADGA to make a little bit more money potentially off of this program. If you don't want your young stock to be scored, which I see no need for my young stock to be scored, so I will not be participating in this, then don't participate in it. If you don't need your bucks to be scored, don't pay the extra $20 if you don't want them scored. I think that having these extra fees on top of it, although is kind of like, more money. But these scores go right into every single person's marketing when they're on Facebook and they say, this animal scored this, right? So this is, if you have a nicely scored animal, you're probably going to be able to sell those kids a little bit easier than if they weren't scored at all. So I think that the potential for increase in, I guess... gain for ADGA, although I don't think they'll gain much. Maybe, you know, stay out of the red. But I think that this is a good thing. I think the appraisers are going to have a heck of a time scoring young stock, especially if, you know, there's a lot of, let's say, Nigerian breeders that have a ton of milkers, and quite a few of them will be like, oh, I'm going to take part in this. Heck yeah. So it's gonna be a long day for those appraisers, and hopefully those kids are collar trained. But all in all, I think this doesn't harm the program, and this is also supposed to be like a pilot to see how judging young stock and animals that are coded 99, how it goes, and then maybe green light for the future. But for me, I don't see a problem.
I think this actually leads very well to my soapbox. And my soapbox is there is a deficit from this program. If you consider everything, I'm not 100% sure if we should be putting the deficit number and blaming linear appraisal and trying to strive to make linear appraisal pay for itself. Obviously, we want to get it a little bit less in the red. That's a good business sense. But I think about it in terms of if you were to go to a grocery store, you see those flyers in the grocery store for kind of the products of the week. And sometimes those prices are insane. But what those are loss leaders. So the grocery store will take a loss on, let's say it's a turkey for Thanksgiving. They're going to pay more than what they're going to make on that turkey because they know you as a buyer are coming into the grocery store, taking advantage of that 99 cents per pound turkey. But while you're there, you're also getting the potatoes and the stuffing mix and the yams, and you're coming to the store. And so maybe they're taking a loss on that turkey, but the profits they're making on the other aspects of it and the fact that they have a customer helps balance it out. I think that really applies to linear appraisal as well. In terms of performance programs, it is the only ADGA performance program that can be done only with registered animals. So what I mean by that is I can milk test, and as long as I have identification numbers of some sort for animals, they can be on milk test. And I can get the same amount of data on my registered and non-registered animals from milk testing. Granted, I'm not getting genetic evaluations and those kind of things. My normal day-to-day poundage, butterfat, somatic cell count, how much she's going to produce in that lactation, I can get with a registered or non-registered animal. But I can't get a non-registered animal appraised. It's keeping people using ADGA with that data they're able to collect. It's giving information, which there are studies. I mean, months ago, maybe even years ago, we talked with Mark Baden on that 40-40-40 episode a little bit about what you can use that linear appraisal data for in terms of that snapshot of how productive that animal is. So it gives people a reason to register goats. People want that information, and so they will register goats to get appraised. It also provides new markets for sellers because I, as a buyer, can look at a DOE's appraisal score from across the country and go, okay, I like these genetics. I like the scores that she has. I want that buck. So that seller is able to register a buck and transfer him to me when maybe I wouldn't necessarily be buying a buck from across the country, or maybe I'd be sticking, maybe I wouldn't have as many bucks or whatever it is. So it's a new market for a seller, which then results in extra registered bucks because they can sell those animals. The other thing is linear appraisal, and I'm just speaking for myself, has helped me to train my dairy goat eye. And yes, it has allowed me to look at my goats critically, which then has allowed me to look at other goats critically, which has had allowed me to go on to become a licensed ADGA judge and judge many a show for ADGA, resulting in those show fees that ADGA is making. And then also filling the need for judges because this is just continuing on my soapbox, kind of a tangent on this. But in our area, we used to have a ton of judges, and obviously things change, but we lost a significant amount of judges' life changes in the past couple of years. So that meant that the judges that were there had to step up and take more judging jobs because there were all of these shows that needed judges. But with that, they were able to keep having these shows and having these shows ADGA sanctioned. People were coming to the shows with their registered goats that they would need registration papers for because there was a judge to fill that need and to judge that as an ADGA show. long tangent short, and I'll sum up my soapbox by this. Yes, I realize the cost to get animals appraised and the balance on that sheet directly creates a loss in the books. If you were to ask breeders what the most valuable part of being an ADGA member is and what insights they use for buying animals and also how it helps them sell animals, and I'm not even talking about if you're linear appraising your animals, but it's also taking advantage of the fact that other people are appraising that those animals and collecting data. And the whole big picture of it, membership retention, different things like that. Linear appraisal is essential to the function of the registry and keeping animals continually being registered. While, yes, we probably want to balance the books a little bit, I understand that. We also have to take it for what it's worth and consider it potentially a loss leader for ADGA.
Very well said.
Soapbox over.
Soapbox over. Yeah, prices increase, people. You might want to think about increasing the prices of your operations and marketing them correctly. And this week, our topic, which we're going to kind of breeze through because we can make it a two-parter. We're almost at an hour already. As we have been talking about for a couple of episodes, this is a time of year that our barns are filled to capacity or even over capacity, if we're being honest. And a lot of animals exchange hands. If I were to go on Facebook right now and scroll for a minute, I'd probably see multiple sales posts and everything for kids and even adult goats. Even with help from using social media and other platforms, when looking to move those extra animals, sometimes finding buyers can be difficult and time-consuming. But it is a necessary task when you breed dairy goats because there are very few people, if any, who can keep them all. On today's episode, we want to dive into the idea that we need to market our goats, particularly the kids. So we'll move right into it. Daniel, what are some of the ways that you have found in the past that has helped generate animal sales?
Obviously, social media is a great platform for that. I've also found that being connected to your local feed store helps generate kid sales. Being connected to a vet who is comfortable recommending your animals helps generate kid sales. Showing animals at fairs and other exhibition events helps generate kid sales. And then word of mouth. But then the other thing is having a really strong web presence. Not only just Facebook, but also having a strong web presence has generated numerous kid sales for me.
I feel exactly the same way. Social media, especially being like a newer breeder, social media helps a lot. But also, yeah, the local shows. I've met a lot of my buyers at local shows. Where are you thinking you need to concentrate your marketing efforts like in the future here?
So for me, I think I realistically need to figure out the market buyer aspect of my herd. And I know we have a great person who reached out to us and will take any from Ringside, actually, and will take any buck kids I want to sell. But that's always, I used to have a really great meat buyer, and when my herd size, different things, bucks moving around, I didn't necessarily, he got out and I just never found a really good meat buyer where I was comfortable selling kids to. But I am very aware that if I can sell a few kids and sell them quick and sell them young, it just will take so much stress off of me. So I do need to concentrate on finding a really, that is a goal. And I, like I said, we do have someone this year that will take any kids I want to send her way. So I'm really appreciative of that. But I think that goes a long way in where I need to do market. But then the other thing is I need to focus on in the next coming years of making sure that a lot of the animals that I potentially have available are spoken for already before they're born. So I need to worry about my pre-kitting marketing and generating those reservations for my herd, because it'll just make my life a lot easier when it's stressful and there's baby goats on the ground. So what's your goals in terms of marketing efforts in the future?
I think I do a decent job marketing my goats. I think maybe taking a little bit more time in editing the post before I hit post would be fine. But also I think that I just need to continue breeding good goats and letting them do the talking. So for me, it's just kind of time is my goal, right? Like, I just need time for my program to grow and to open a few more eyes. So, yeah.
So does the kids' expected home influence your marketing? And how does that change the content for a for sales listing that you may put out there?
If I'm marketing like a weather, then it honestly, if they go, they go. Right. So mm-hmm. I'm not really going to let that influence. I mean, obviously, if like it's a really nice buck kid or doe kid, yeah, I'm going to market him a little bit harder. You know, I'm going to say the things that I need to say and give the information I need to give to try to catch the attention of people that might be a show home or performance home. So, yeah, I would adjust a little bit there. And, you know, it affects by, you know, the information I give. I don't want to say the story I tell, but the way I lay it out there, I will most definitely describe what I like about the animal, what I like about the dam and sire, if I'm trying to push them to go to a good home. And I'll also describe what I don't like in some cases if there's a flaw that needs to be aired out there. What about you?
So that kid's expected home 100% influence how I'm marketing it. So let's say I have a kid that I want to send to a pet home. Maybe I'm really attached to them or just generally looking for a pet home for a weather or a problem doe kid. Maybe she has an extra teat or isn't quite up to the standards. What I'm creating in that ad for her or him is cute baby pictures of that animal. I mean, a close up on the face and them outside frolicking or playing, whatever I can kind of catch that makes them look cute and take me home, make me your pet. If I have a buck kid that I feel is a solid animal and I have no problem keeping him a buck and registering him, but maybe he's not out of my top animals and where I'm expecting him to go is more somebody who is a homesteader who wants a registered buck or a dairy who needs a solid pedigree of production but doesn't need to dive deeper than that. Those kind of middle of the line bucks that provide a good solid foundation but maybe aren't the flashy showy ones that are born, those will get a nice picture of him, maybe a little bit more information on if it's the dairy genetics we're looking for, those production information, those kind of things. And a little bit about that pedigree and insight. But it's also the idea of disease management. All of those things will go into that kid's post. Now, if I have a heavy hitter who has a kid that I really want to sell, the effort I'm going to be putting into that creation of a post, and whether this is for social media or, you know, like back in the day we were using Craigslist, and obviously Craigslist exists, but it's just no longer a large entity for kids sales, at least around me.
Yeah, Craigslist is trash.
I feel like
for our area.
I still like, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Some people still use it and have success with it, but you're not, it's not the right market for those, for all of the animals. But so anyway, so these show stopping animals, I'm going to put in more effort because ultimately there's a more limited population of people who this animal would go to just by nature of everything. The price is probably going to be higher, but I'm also wanting to have that animal go to a home where it will live up to its potential. So there's going to be a little bit more involved in creating that campaign, I want to say, to sell that animal. And so just different things like that really kind of influence mm-hmm. how I'm going to market that animal, because sometimes it's very easy to just sell a bunch of cute babies, and all it really takes is one really, really cute picture of a face of a little baby Nubian, and I'll have buyers forever. And then sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get the animals where it needs to be.
Yeah, I think it also depends on the breed that you raise, as far as how fast you can get them out the door. I mean, when we had Nigerians, those things flew off the shelves, right? Mm-hmm. When we had the Guernseys, I just sold my two milkers. I had the post up for not even 12 hours, and they're going to be going to their new home in a couple weeks here. It just depends on the breed you raise. Oberhasli, I don't want to say it's tough, because if you have quality animals, they go pretty well. But, I mean, I have a really good quality experimental buck kid. And it's just, and granted, he is experimental. So that's why he's having a tough time. But it's he's probably going to go as a weather, and for me, eventually, which I'm okay with. But at the same time, it's like, man, somebody's missing out on a really nice opportunity here. So I think it really depends on the breed as far as how fast they move and maybe how well you have to word your posts and take the time to get it out there. Now, Daniel, we're going to ask, or we're going to do two more questions. And I think we need to make this a two-parter because we could go on for another hour.
Okay. Sounds good.
The next one is, can you recognize who your customer is, and are you reaching them?
I think this is a great question to ask yourself, because
mm-hmm.
it'll help you in your marketing to figure that out. And ultimately, kind of as I said earlier, your markets may be three different markets, four different markets. There might be in your farm, you might have different, there's so many places a goat can go. And so you might have a pet market that is insane. And then you might have a meat market where the guy comes every Tuesday and you say, okay, take all of these buck kids, and, but not this one, because I want to hold him back, because you know, he needs to go to a customer that is going to be doing X, Y, and Z with him. And then you have the does that'll make an impact in the show ring. You need to realize that it is not a one size fits all situation when you're marketing your goats, but you also have to realize where these goats fall on the spectrum of your herd, but then also the dairy goat world at large. Sometimes it's easy to fly kids around. We're getting a little trickier in that situation with limited airlines doing that. So maybe we can't necessarily always get them from a different area of the country, but it is something that people readily do. And so where are you in all of that? And how does that influence your market? Is some things that you as a breeder and as a seller in your marketing platform, I think definitely need to consider, because it influences, first of all, where it really influences if you're reaching them. Are is it easier if you put an ad in a local farming magazine and get a million hits? Or do you need to go to your feed store and say, here's my business card. I have nice quality animals that maybe they're not, that are just looking for homesteads to go to. If somebody comes looking, feel free to give my information out because I'll have this. Do dairies know about you when you have really productive animals and that are assets to herds and just different things like that? Are you able to reach the right customer when you're putting those sales out there?
Right. I agree wholeheartedly. I think people also need to realize where their program is at when they're marketing these animals to reach the customer base. I'll use myself as an example here. My program is middle of the road right now in my eyes. And I know that there's a certain type of breeder that will, as a majority of my animals, not as an entirety, because I do have different levels of animals in my herd currently, but as a majority, my customers are going to be those 4-H families. They're going to be those families that just need a backyard milker or buck or doe kit. They need, there's people that just want something for their house as a pet. And those are the type of animals that I'm selling currently. Granted, I really do need to open up my eyes and realize that the quality is getting there for my animals. And it's been hard for me. And I definitely need to look at my program really hard next year to reevaluate what I'm selling my animals for, because it's not making sense this year. So for me, from last year, the year before, and this year is kind of like a hem-har, but I know that there are certain groups on Facebook that I can share my posts to reach that type of demographic that that appeals to my program and my program appeals to them. And I think if you realize what your customer base is and you share that information as an entirety to like Hudson Valley Farm Swap or whatever Facebook group in your area is, you'll probably have a lot more success with moving animals faster if you realize what you've got. I'm not going to go online and say, this is a nationally competitive animal, because it's probably not. So I'm not going to say, hey, you nationally competitive person or who wants to be nationally competitive, get this animal from me because she's going to take you to the front of the line. Like, I'm not there yet. And I would never have the gauze to say that anyway. But I think if people just take a look in the mirror, like you said, and look at their program and look at what they have to offer and try to reach out to that, we'll call it a fan base, then you're going to do well.
No, I agree.
Does that make sense?
No, it makes a lot of sense. Okay. I definitely agree on that thought.
What we mentioned Facebook a lot here, but what are the resources or outlets that are available to help you sell your animals?
I mentioned this earlier. A strong website will do you a world of good. I know that sometimes I feel that the harder place to sell animals are, though, at least for my herd, is the weather buck kid kind of aspect. Most of the time, my doe kids are spoken for pretty quickly.
Isn't that crazy how that works out? And I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, you're fine.
If you really think about a lot of our friends and a lot of programs out there, us, when we're looking at animals to buy, what are we usually looking to add to our herd, Danielle?
Usually I'm adding a buck.
But you see all of these posts or that people are bringing in all these new does. And it's just, I think, like, how is it that I have such a hard time, or you have such a hard time, or whoever has a hard time selling these buck kids, and they're they're just like sitting there. But your dough kids could be like the worst dough kid you've ever bred, and people gobble it right up. It's probably up there for not even a day. I just think it's nuts.
Well, but I think so. I think it's just in that regard, I only need one. Realistically, I mean, I know I have 2 bucks currently and several tanks of semen, but I realistically could probably have 1 buck for my herd and be okay. Like, you know what I mean? So, yes, you may be looking to bring in a buck, and I probably will only be bringing in a buck. But at the same time, I only need one. You only need one. You know, or, and maybe, obviously, if you have more animals, it's a whole different story. Maybe it's 2. But the influence of that buck is going to be that much larger because you only need one. Versus somebody who's growing their program and wants to have a competitive doe to add, or is looking to start a herd and wants to have 2 or 3 does. Add in the fact that I'm keeping some does myself, that number can change pretty quickly, and it's also where the herd is. My herd might not necessarily be the herd that you want to get a buck from, and listen, it's totally understandable, but you can take a really solid doe from my herd and have success in the show ring with her and do this and do that with her. So I understand it, but it is kind of funny when you think about it that way, that, like, what do we get? We get bucks, because the does just keep populating themselves.
No, food for thought. And this, like I said, I mean, we're already at, like, 1 hour and 10 minutes right now as it sits. So, although after editing, who knows? but I think we have enough here. And, I mean, we're – these next couple questions that are on this list – really sinks its teeth into the whole aspect of marketing your animals. So I think people will definitely want to tune into that. We might have a guest next week, but this second part will be coming up shortly after if we do. So, do you want to add anything, Danielle, before we wrap it up?
No, I think we're good, and we will continue this in a in an upcoming episode.
I do want to read our Apple Podcast review of the day.
Okay,
if that's cool. All right, so this one is from Moobird1. 5 stars. #1 goat podcast. How I haven't found this show until now is beyond me. Danielle and John do such an awesome job. And they spelled my name right.
Nice.
This is a great dairy goat podcast for any level breeder. Thank you, Moobird. Appreciate that. Also, thank you to the Gray Goat for sponsoring this episode of Ringside. Danielle, we also have our own social media and website where people can find us. Where can they do that?
So you can find us at dairygoatpodcast.com. Where, if you haven't seen, we do have our new I Survived Kidding Season 2023 stickers up. So if you survived, treat yourself to a sticker. And we also have all of our other merch there as well. You can listen to our podcast there if it's easier.
And Cat Lady stickers coming soon.
Yeah. And you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook if you search Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Ringside_Goat_Podcast. And you can find us on TikTok at Ringside Podcast. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, leave us a rating. We really appreciate it.
Yes, yes. And Danielle, good luck to you for your kiddings this week. I have one as well. So it'll be a race to see who kids first.
We know it's going to be the Oberhasi.
Yes, it will be the Oberhasi.
Oberhasi.
Yeah, we'll see. If your dough kids before mine's induced, then who knows?
I don't think that's going to happen.
All right, well, we'll see. Everybody, it's been a pleasure. And this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
And tattoo your kids.
Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.